Bliss by Catherine Mansfield. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2012. Part 2. They had people coming to dinner. The Norman Knights, a very sound couple. He was about to start a theatre, and she was awfully keen on interior decoration. A young man, Eddie Warren, who had just published a little book of poems and whom everybody was asking to dine, and a find of Bertha's called Pearl Fulton. What Miss Fulton did, Bertha didn't know. They had met at the club, and Bertha had fallen in love with her, as she always did fall in love with beautiful women who had something strange about them. The provoking thing was that, though they had been about together and met a number of times and really talked, Bertha couldn't yet make her out. Up to a certain point, Miss Fulton was rarely wonderfully frank, but the certain point was there, and beyond that she would not go. Was there anything beyond it? Harry said no, voted her dullish and cold like all blonde women, with a touch, perhaps, of anemia of the brain. But Bertha wouldn't agree with him. Not yet, at any rate. No, the way she has of sitting with her head a little on one side and smiling has something behind it, Harry, and I must find out what that something is.
Most likely it's a good stomach, answered Harry.
He made a point of catching Bertha's heels with replies of that kind.
Liver frozen, my dear girl.
Or
pure flatulence.
Or
kidney disease.
And so on. For some strange reason, Bertha liked this and almost admired it in him very much. She went into the drawing room and lighted the fire. Then, picking up the cushions, one by one, that Mary had disposed so carefully, she threw them back onto the chairs and the couches. That made all the difference. The room came alive at once. As she was about to throw the last one, she surprised herself by suddenly hugging it to her passionately, passionately. But it did not put out the fire in her bosom. Oh, on the contrary. The windows of the drawing room opened onto a balcony overlooking the garden. At the far end, against the wall, there was a tall, slender pear tree in fullest, richest bloom. It stood perfect, as though becalmed against the jade green sky. Bertha couldn't help feeling, even from this distance, that it had not a single bud or a faded petal. Down below, in the garden beds, the red and yellow tulips, heavy with flowers, seemed to lean upon the dusk. A grey cat, dragging its belly, crept across the lawn, and a black one, its shadow, trailed after. The sight of them, so intent and so quick, gave Bertha a curious shiver.
Oh, what creepy things cats are, she stammered, and she turned away from the window and began walking up and down.
How strong the jonquils smelled in the warm room. Too strong? Oh, no. And yet, as though overcome, she flung down on a couch and pressed her hands to her eyes.
I'm too happy. Too happy, she murmured.
And she seemed to see on her eyelids the lovely pear tree with its wide-open blossoms as a symbol of her own life. Really? Really? She had everything. She was young. Harry and she were as much in love as ever, and they got on together splendidly and were really good pals. She had an adorable baby. They didn't have to worry about money. They had this absolutely satisfactory house and garden. And friends, modern, thrilling friends, writers and painters and poets, or people keen on social questions. Just the kind of friends they wanted. And then there were books, and there was music, and she had found a wonderful little dressmaker, and they were going abroad in the summer, and their new cook made the most superb omelettes. I'm absurd. Absurd! She sat up, but she felt quite dizzy, quite drunk. It must have been the spring. Yes, it was the spring. Now she was so tired she could not drag herself upstairs to dress. A white dress, a string of jade beads, green shoes and stockings. It wasn't intentional. She had thought of this scheme hours before she stood at the drawing room window. Her petals rustled softly into the hall, and she kissed Mrs. Norman Knight, who was taking off the most amusing orange coat with a procession of black monkeys around the hem and up the fronts.
Why? Why? Why is the middle class so stodgy, so utterly without a sense of humour?
My dear, it's only by a fluke that I am here at all. Norman being the protective fluke. For my darling monkeys so upset the train that it rose to a man and simply ate me with its eyes. Didn't laugh, wasn't amused. That I should have loved. No, just stared and bored me through and through. But the cream of it was, said Norman, pressing a large tortoiseshell-rimmed monocle into his eye. You don't mind me telling this face, do you? In their home and among their friends, they called each other Face and Mug. The cream of it was, when she, being full-fed, turned to the woman beside her and said, Haven't you ever seen a monkey before?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Norman Knight joined in the laughter. Wasn't that too absolutely creamy?
And a funnier thing still was that now her coat was off, she did look like a very intelligent monkey, who had even made that yellow silk dress out of scraped banana skins. And her amber earrings, they were like little dangling nuts.
This is a sad, sad fall, said Mug, pausing in front of little Bee's perambulator. When the perambulator comes into the hall...
And he waved the rest of the quotation away. The bell rang. It was lean, pale Eddie Warren, as usual, in a state of acute distress.
It is the right house, isn't it?
He pleaded.
Oh, I think so. I hope so, said Bertha brightly.
I have had such a dreadful experience with a taxi man. He was most sinister. I couldn't get him to stop. The more I knocked and called, the faster he went. And, in the moonlight, the bizarre figure with the flattened head crouching over the little wheel.
He shuddered, taking off an immense white silk scarf. Bertha noticed that his socks were white too. Most charming.
But how dreadful! She cried.
Yes, it really was, said Eddie, following her into the drawing room. I saw myself driving through eternity in a timeless taxi.
He knew the Norman Knights. In fact, he was going to write a play for NK when the theatre scheme came off.
Well, Warren, how's the play? Said Norman Knight, dropping his monocle and giving his eyes a moment in which to rise to the surface before it was screwed down again.
And Mrs. Norman Knight,
Oh, Mr. Warren, what happy socks!
I am so glad you like them, said he, staring at his feet. They seem to have got so much whiter since the moon rose.
And he turned his lean, sorrowful young face to Bertha.
There is a moon, you know.
She wanted to cry.
I am sure there is, often, often.
He really was a most attractive person. But so was Face, crouched before the fire in her banana skins, and so was Mug, smoking a cigarette and saying, as he flicked the ash,
Why doth the bridegroom tarry?
There he is now!